This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. The National Weather Service has issued a hurricane warning along the Texas coast. In the past few hours, Tropical Storm Claudette has moved closer to Corpus Christi than an earlier landfall prediction of Brownsville, Texas. Alan Mahler with the National Weather Service office in Dallas says with the storm's current direction, Claudette could make landfall late tomorrow.
That would put the hurricane or the tropical storm, whichever it's going to be, inland probably sometime late Tuesday, it looks like right now.
The center of Tropical Storm Claudette remains about 290 miles east-southeast of Corpus Christi, Texas. The recent attacks on U.S. soldiers in Iraq may not be due to forces loyal to ousted Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. A group claiming to have links to al-Qaeda claims it's responsible for the attacks. In a taped statement aired by Al Arabiya Television, a spokesman for the group also said a new attack would soon divide the back of America completely. A commuter train bound for New York City derailed early this morning during the height of rush hour in New Jersey. Steve Sandberg reports.
The 645 New Jersey Transit train out of Trenton bound for New York's Penn Station jumped the tracks just west of the new Secaucus transfer station. It happened around 8 this morning. Cars 6 and 7 of the 12-car train derailed. Emergency crews are on scene. They treated several passengers. Others placed on ambulances and rushed to nearby Meadowlands Hospital in downtown Secaucus. Extent of those injuries are unknown. A safety train is pulled up alongside this disabled train. Passengers are being put on and will head straight to Penn Station. Some inbound trains along the Northeast Corridor line are being allowed in at very slow speeds. And again, this train was packed this morning when it derailed. About 1,200 passengers were on board. Steve Sandberg, Secaucus.
On Wall Street this hour, the Dow was up 143 points, the Nasdaq up 38, and the S&P up 16 points.
Hey, Larry, baby, you want to go for a ride?
Why, Vince, I didn't know you cared.
I don't, but I'm looking for a baby.
Oh, but Vince, we're crash dummies.
Well, your head's about the size of a baby.
What are you doing?
Taking it off!
Stop!
I'm using your head in a rear-facing infancy.
Why?
To show how babies up front are in airbag danger.
You know I get sick when I ride backwards and without a body.
Up in front, kids won't know what hit them when the airbag blows.
Then why do people put their kids up front, Vince?
I don't know. Maybe it makes them feel better to see them sitting by their side. Although, if my baby looked like you, he'd ride in the trunk.
Hey, where are we going, Vince?
Yeah, you know that brick wall with the big bullseye?
I can see it vaguely in the back of my mind.
Well, in 2 seconds, that's exactly where it's going to be. Holy cow, Larry, you're embedded in the seat.
Tire iron.
I can't understand you. I'll go get a tire iron.
Thank you.
You could learn a lot from a dummy. Buckle your kids in the back seat. A message from the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Major U.S. airlines had the safest record ever in 2002, but it was also the worst ever financially. No one flying in a commercial passenger jet last year was killed in a crash or accident. But last year, airlines posted losses of more than $11 billion. Industry experts believe the better safety record was due to the grounding of older planes. California could see its first gubernatorial recall election soon. Hundreds of thousands of recall petitions are scheduled to be delivered to the California State Election Office this week. It's possible anti-recall forces or Governor Gray Davis may challenge the legality of some of the petitions in court.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One A Day Men's Health Formula. One A Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One A Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
UN Secretary General Kofi Annan is hoping for a quick decision from President Bush on a possible deployment of U.S. peacekeeping troops to Liberia. Annan meets with Bush at the White House this afternoon.
I hope my discussions in Washington will be helpful to the Liberian process, and that in the not-too-distant future, the president will take a decision, which I hope will bring happiness to lots of people in the region.
Annan met with Secretary of State Colin Powell at the State Department this morning. And it's the middle of the season in Major League Baseball, and that means it's time to get ready for the All-Star Game. It'll take place at U.S. Cellular Field in Chicago tomorrow night. Meantime, tonight, the league's top sluggers will compete in the annual Home Run Derby. Yankees first baseman Jason Giambi won last year's Derby at Miller Park in Milwaukee. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. What could the Lost in Space robot and Star Wars R2-D2 have in common with a phenomenon called dieseling? Will Robinson and Luke Skywalker know? And when I come back, I'll tell you.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is racing. For Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and John Andretti, there's one more key to racing. Champion spark plugs. They race different makes of cars. Chevy, Pontiac, Dodge, Ford. But they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion spark plugs.
Just like Will and Luke have some far-fetched friends to warn them of impending danger, your car has ways to warn you of the impending danger of neglected maintenance. One tune-up red flag is dieseling. Known as afterrun, dieseling occurs when an engine chugs on after the ignition is turned off. Causes? Inferior gas, excessive idle speed, and carbon in the combustion chamber. Dieseling is just one warning that, if neglected, may leave you lost in space. The space alongside the road. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program today. Boy, lots of stuff going on in the world. We're broadcasting coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system, channel 145. And broadcasting live on the Internet from RadioPower.org, IEAmericaRadio.com, and archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Welcome to the program. Lots and lots of stuff. Boy, it is... They're going nuts in Washington. This whole situation with these 16 words, it's like overlooking the big picture. It boggles my mind how they're... Okay, Rumsfeld comes on and he says, well, you know, it doesn't... Or Rice, Condoleezza Rice for that matter. And, you know, first of all, it's apparent that the whole thing of George Tenet falling on his sword is basically to protect Condoleezza Rice, because she, on a couple of occasions, to deflect blame away from herself, away from Powell, away from Rumsfeld, largely... and, of course, from Bush, from the neocon war hawks, blamed it on Tenet when she was in Africa a couple of days ago. And I think she thought that she could just say that and that would be the end of it. And instead it blew up. And so Tenet, you know, being a good soldier and being probably the only leftover from the Clinton administration, falls on his sword. He says, okay, I'll take the fall for this thing. But these 16, yeah, okay, British intelligence is conducting a review right now of whether or not they think that there might have been something to the possibility of uranium in Africa. But it's beside the point. It's like I've pointed this out several times in the last couple of weeks, and I think that the folks in the media are maybe starting to get it. I mean, you're starting to get it from the questions that are coming forward in the media and the way that some of these people are being questioned now. But, well, for example, I was having a conversation with somebody a couple of days ago about this, who said, well, you know, the number of Americans who've died in Iraq has only been about one a day. I mean, isn't that about what happens in Detroit or New York City? Well, first of all, no, it's not. We don't have murder rates anywhere near that high in the United States, but anymore. But secondly, even if it were, it begs the question, for what reason? Why? What is worth one of our Americans every single day and dying? And also there's a significant difference, I think, between people who die in gang violence, which accounts for, I believe, if I'm wrong, somebody correct me on this, but I believe that this is the case, that many, if not most, of the murders that happen in the United States happen essentially among combatants, that is to say, you know, in the drug wars. And, you know, our soldiers who signed up for the Army, yeah, sure, you could say, well, they signed up, they're going off to war, they know it, there's risks. Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And Jessica Lynch, for example, signed up for the Army because she wanted to get the GI Bill, or the equivalent, you know. She wanted to get enough college as a result of going to the Army that she could become a teacher. She didn't sign up to go off and kill people and be shot at. I mean, you know, yes, that was the price, but it didn't look like that was a very high probability. And so here we have our soldiers who are being put in harm's way, quite different from enthusiastic gangbangers walking around with machine guns. You've got people who are being put in harm's way who are willing to do it in service of a noble cause, who are willing to do it in service of democracy in the United States, who are willing to do it in service of their nation. And why are they in Iraq? This question... Well, because Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Well, now, yeah, I mean, all of the experts testified that if they had chemical warfare agents, with the single possible exception of mustard gas, anything that was more than 10 years old would be useless. And they haven't been importing the chemicals necessary to make the stuff. Biological agents, yeah, sure, that was something we don't know. We didn't know. But what kind of intelligence does it take? What do we have to learn all around? This just boggles my mind. The reality of the situation is that Iraq, as Wolfowitz said, is sitting on a sea of oil. The United States, with about 5% of the world's population, is consuming 25 to 30% of the planet's oil. We also, oddly enough, have about 25% of the planet's prisoners. That's another discussion for perhaps later in the day. And we're encouraging more and more of this with the tax deduction that we're offering to small businesses if they buy SUVs. And you know, on it goes, and there's all this oil over in Iraq, and we've got this natural gas crisis that Greenspan is talking about, and there's a natural gas pipeline being built across Afghanistan. And there is no connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. This has been demonstrated. George Tenet has been saying this all along and has recently reaffirmed it. This is something, you know, going after Iraq. If they had done it in 91, if they had gone all the way to Baghdad, I don't recall if I mentioned this on Friday or not. I certainly was thinking about it. I started writing a piece about this. That we wonder why the folks in Iraq are not embracing us the way they did the Japanese and the way the Japanese and the Germans did the American GIs after the war. And the simple reality is that after World War II, the Germans and the Japanese knew that their governments had done wrong. I'm pretty sure I mentioned this now, the more I think about it. And the Iraqis are perceiving themselves as the victims of aggression. I mean, if this would have been 91, maybe after they attacked Kuwait, although arguably, you know, they thought that Kuwait was the, 28th province or something like that. But, and Iraq was drilling these slant wells under the border into the Iraqi oil fields, which was making the Iraqis crazy. But it's about oil. And everybody was saying to Bush, not everybody, but the folks like Howard Dean who were opposed to the war, were saying to Bush, if you go into Iraq without some really clear, demonstrable reason, you're going to create more terrorists than you're going to get rid of. Al-Qaeda was on the run. Yeah, we haven't got Osama yet, but you know they were at least chasing him down, and then we decided to recalibrate and take a year and do something completely different. And so in today's news, a group calling itself a wing of Al-Qaeda, this from the Los Angeles Times today, a group calling itself a wing of Al-Qaeda claimed responsibility Sunday for attacks on American troops in Iraq, as U.S. forces killed five Iraqis in raids aimed at preventing such violence during two Iraqi holidays this week. The claim made in an audio tape aired on Dubai-based Al Arabiya Television insisted that allies of deposed Iraqi President Saddam Hussein played no role in the recent attacks. And the tape, as you heard in the news report just a minute ago, also said that it would divide the back of America completely. I think it's a bad translation of what they mean is break the back of America. Here's an actual quote from the tape. The group calls themselves the Armed Islamic Movement for Al-Qaeda, the Fallujah Branch. So this is the spreading that comes about when people perceive themselves. This is what, the British had the same experience in Iraq back at the turn of the last century, you know, in the 70 years ago. This group says, quote, I swear by, this is the tape, I swear by God no one from his, Saddam's, followers carried out any jihad operation like he claims. They are a result of our brothers in jihad, end quote. 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, 1-800-825-5937. What we're going to get into here is what does executive privilege have in common with King's feudalism in this administration, which I think is a fascinating historical topic, and a few other things that maybe you haven't thought about. But I just wanted to start with this, and Jeff in Dallas, Texas is on the line.
Well, good morning, Tom. Jeff, how are you?
I am great. How are you today, Jeff?
I'm doing fine. I see your name and your show bandied about quite a bit, so congratulations on your success.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure where you're seeing it bandied, but that's nice to hear.
Well, I do see it. I receive email. You know, at RadioLeft.com, obviously we receive a lot of email from all kinds of places.
Right.
And so we do see your name quite a bit, and we see it, we see websites that have links to your radio station site and that kind of stuff. So
it looks
like you're
doing. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. I thought I recognized your voice when you first came on, but I wasn't quite sure. And so it's Jeff from Radio Left. Welcome. Welcome. Hey, Jeff, what's up? We got 2 minutes
here before
the
break. Well, I want to ask a question of you. I heard someone over the weekend who made the claim, I don't remember who it was, but it was on CNN or one of those places, mm-hmm. that back before Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, that in fact his government had contacted the U.S. government and asked what would happen if he invaded Kuwait, and he was told by the Daddy Bush administration, well, nothing. And so he invades Kuwait, and then Daddy Bush initially does nothing, and then Margaret Thatcher made a trip to the U.S. in which she convinced Bush that he needed to do something. So, in other words, the accusation is that our government gave Saddam Hussein permission, saying, we won't do anything to you if you invade Kuwait. And then they went back.
It was April Gillespie was the name of the State Department official who met with Saddam a week or so before he invaded Kuwait. And it's a matter of public record. It was in the New York Times and all the other media at the time. And he had asked Gillespie what would happen if we attack, and she had said, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember her exact words, but it was something very close to that. We don't consider this, our business. It's not going to be a concern of ours, which he took to be tacit permission to invade. Jeff, thanks for the call and the comment.
Thank you.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Generals and Generals Tuesday on DVD.
Forward!
In a war that divided a nation, they fought with courage.
You are the first brigade!
Faith.
The rest is in God's hands.
And honor.
We will conquer!
The Magnificent Epic is now the DVD, with extras including historical commentaries and featurettes. Jeff Daniels, Stephen Lang, and Robert Duvall as Robert E. Lee.
Destroy the enemy. God be with you.
Own Gods and Generals Tuesday on DVD and video. Rated PG-13 for sustained battle sequences.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol?
Yes, Ms. Cole. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims, court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free family legal guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kicking off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
He's 5 foot 2 and he's 6 feet 4. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Boy, it is an honor to receive a call from Jeff Staples at RadioLeft.com. Jeff, thank you for that call, and we ran up against the break there. I hope that you you had your entire point out. If I chopped you off, give us a shout back. But RadioLeft.com. I've been down there. I've been in their studios. I've been on their show. They're great people, and good programming. Washington and the origins of presidential power. There is this thing going on in Washington, D.C. right now with this administration where they are claiming executive privilege for some of the most outrageous things, including Dick Cheney's deal, his get-together with Enron and the other guys in the energy business about what sort of quid pro quo there was going to be, what the national energy policy would be, what maybe what levels of pollution would happen, maybe what kind of oil subsidies, what kind of drilling tax credits, who's going to get what kind of tax break? Who knows? I mean, who knows? The who knows is because they are fighting tooth and nail to keep not just the transcript secret, but even the even who they talked to. They have yet to release. Dick Cheney has yet to release a list of who he talked to in this. People, by the way, Tim Russert on Meet the Press this weekend kept asking over and over and over Don Rumsfeld a question, and Condi Rice got asked this question several times, and neither one of them ever answered it, which was, who was it who pushed for the State of the Union address to be this anti-Saddam rant? Who was it who pushed for the uranium, for example, to be in the State of the Union address? And at one point, Rumsfeld denied that it was him. And my guess is that the puppet master here is actually Dick Cheney, and that he's the one who's being protected, and he's the one who's causing folks like George Tenet, the only holdover from the Clinton administration still intact, to fall on his sword. Anyhow, back in 1787, when the Constitution was first put together, the powers of the president, here we look at Article 2 of the Constitution, defines the powers of the executive branch. The executive power shall be invested in the President of the United States. And that's it. That one sentence, he shall hold his office during the term of 4 years, and together with the vice president chosen for the same term, he shall be elected as follows, and it goes through that. But the executive power shall be invested in a president of the United States. The Constitution does not give executive powers to the vice president. Oddly enough, the vice president is actually covered in the Constitution under the legislative branch. He's the president of the Senate. His job is to oversee the Senate and to break ties. When the Constitution was put together, when this country was first founded, there weren't political parties, and people didn't run for office as president, vice president, like we do now. You had a situation where Thomas Jefferson was the vice president because he got the second most votes for president. And John Adams was the president because he got the first most votes for president. And these two guys were enemies. So, it's sort of like proportional representation. So anyhow, we have a situation now where somebody who doesn't have executive privilege, Cheney, is claiming it. Where is this going to go? Let's take a look at the history of executive privilege. This is really an interesting thing. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay with the Tom Hartman program. We'll return in just a few minutes.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Verizon Communications must rehire 2,300 workers it laid off last December after an arbitrator ruled Friday their dismissal was in violation of their union contract. The jobs, all based in New York State, needed to be cut because of what Verizon called weak economic conditions in the telecommunications industry. But that's not enough justification to invoke a clause in a contract with the Communications Workers of America allowing for immediate layoffs. In addition to getting their jobs back, all 2,300 workers will receive more than 6 months' worth of back pay, which will cost Verizon an estimated $100 million.
Disney's employees, which the corporation likes to call its cast members, have long been bound by a Byzantine set of regulations regarding hair length and color, facial hair, as well as prohibitions on tattoos, piercings, and various forms of jewelry. But for the first time since 2000, the company has rolled back its restrictions on personal grooming and dress. For the first time, men will be allowed to wear their hair in braids, albeit above the collar. Women, meanwhile, will be permitted to wear more revealing footwear and less conservative earrings. Pantyhose, however, are still mandatory.
Has the state of Wisconsin been unwittingly helping strikebreakers in a four-month walkout at a Tyson Foods pepperoni processing plant? United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 538, which represents the 470 striking workers at the plant in Jefferson, has discovered that at least 20 convicted felons on probation or parole are working to help keep the facility running. Many of them are still living in halfway houses. The Wisconsin Department of Corrections says it has no control over how offenders get jobs. That's handled through a private temp agency. However, the state does say it will stop referring offenders to that agency so as to help clear up any misunderstanding.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Mother, Mother Ocean, I've heard you call, wanted to sail upon your waters. I was 3 feet tall. You've seen it all. You've seen it all.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. What does executive privilege have in common with King's feudalism? And this administration, our quote for the day, by the way, is from John Kennedy. He said, "The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are as a people inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, secret oaths, and secret proceedings." End quote. So back in 1787, George Washington, the Constitution was put together. George Washington was actually, there were, as I recall, six presidents who preceded Washington during the 6 years before the Constitution was finally ratified. And what was the first one's name? John, I want to say John Marshall. That wasn't it. Anyway, so George Washington realized that because the Constitution did not clearly and in detail define both the responsibilities and the powers of the president, I mean, there are a few that are defined. For example, Section 1, this is Article 2, Section 1. Number 3 is about election. Section 2, you get in, the president should be commander of the chief of the Navy of the United States, the Army and Navy of the United States. Number 2, he shall have the power with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties. Number 3, the president shall have the power to fill up vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate. And Section 3, from time to time, he shall inform Congress about the State of the Union. And Section 4, the president, the vice president, and all civil officers shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And that's it. That's the entire description. I mean, there were some fill-in-the-blank parts there where it went on at length to describe what it was saying. But basically, that I just read you everything in the United States Constitution about the president, about the executive branch. And so Washington realized that what he was doing as president was establishing precedent. In fact, in May of 1789, he wrote a letter to a friend. He said, "Many things which appear of little importance in themselves and at the beginning may have great and durable consequences from their having been established at the commencement of a new general government." In other words, he knew that what he was doing, the way he conducted himself as president of the United States, was going to establish a precedent. He traveled around the country. He traveled to every single state in the Union in his first year as president to make clear to the people that as president, he wasn't a king, that he, because there was some concern about that. I mean, you'd had Alexander Hamilton standing up during the Constitutional Convention saying monarchy was the best form of government. I mean, there were still a lot of people in this country who thought we were making a huge mistake by not going with a constitutional monarchy. See, at the time of the American Revolution, there were three other republics in the world. I forget right off the top of my head which countries they were. I think the Netherlands was one of them. But there were three other nations that actually had constitutions, and they were all monarchies. And there were a lot of people in the United States who were saying, this is what we should have. George Washington should be a king. And Washington was, you know, flattered. He at one point talked about how he would like to be called His Highness, but no, he chose not to. And he, for example, another thing he did was he opened the doors of the presidential house. He didn't live in the White House at that point, but he opened the doors of the presidential mansion to average citizens a certain number of days each week. And I haven't been able to find how many hours or how many days, but every week there was a couple of days of the week and certain hours of the day when anybody could walk in the door and sit down and have a conversation with George Washington. And he, in his letters and his diaries, he talks about this, and he talks about how he found it sometimes very discomforting. Because he'd get, you know, you get the kind of wackos off the street. People would come in with strange things, or they'd come to him as if they were petitioning the king. You know, will you please get so-and-so, these sorts of things. And it was exasperating, but he continued it throughout his term of office. John Adams stopped the practice. Adams was much more of a, you know, I, Claudius. I mean, today, by the way, is the anniversary. Today is the anniversary in, it must have been 1798. Yeah, 1798, 2 years, yeah, into Adams' term. Today is the anniversary that John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, left town today because he refused to be in town when John Adams signed the Alien and Sedition Acts. Today is the anniversary of John Adams shooting himself in the foot. It ended up being the end of his presidency. Adams lost the presidency. He could have had two terms. I mean, Washington had two terms. Jefferson had two terms. But he blew it by signing his equivalent of the Patriot Act. We've talked about that on other programs, so I won't go into a long rant about it. But today is the anniversary. So anyhow, George Washington was kind of filling in the blanks of Article 2 of the United States Constitution, and he realized that he was doing this. And nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it talk about executive privilege. The phrase doesn't exist, and the concept doesn't even exist. Nowhere in the Constitution does it talk about separation of powers, although that's clear from the Federalist Papers, for example, and things like that. But the practice of executive privilege, of the executive, the president, being able to say, what I do is private, is not something that is found in the Constitution. So where did it come from? Well, the George Washington actually had several situations that happened while he was president where he did want to keep things private. And he felt that presidential secrecy was something that was appropriate in a very narrow band of areas. That he felt that he had the right to withhold things. The phrase actually wasn't coined until the Eisenhower administration in the 1950s. This phrase, executive privilege, didn't exist before then. But the concept goes back to George Washington's administration. And there was this one point in time where they came before George Washington and they said, you know, we want to know what's going on. They were investigating. There was a call. This was on March 27th of 1792 to call for such persons, papers, and records as may be necessary to assist their inquiries into this thing that had to do with General Arthur St. Clair, an expedition in November of 1791 against Native Americans, and several hundred people had died, and it was a huge embarrassment to the Washington administration, the George Washington administration. And Congress came in and said, you know, we want all the details of this. And Washington pulled together his advisors, his cabinet. And this was, these were some pretty impressive folks: Alexander Hamilton, Henry Knox, Edmund Randolph, and Thomas Jefferson. And the four of them, along with George Washington, on April 2nd, 1792, had an all-day meeting. And when they were finished, Thomas Jefferson wrote, and I quote, "We had all considered and were of one mind, first, that the House was on an inquest, and therefore might institute inquiries. Second, that it might call for papers generally. Third, that the executive, that is the president, ought to communicate such papers as the public good would permit, and ought to refuse those the disclosure of which would injure the public. Fourth, that neither the committees nor House has a right to call on the head of a department who and whose papers were under the president alone, but that the committee should instruct their chairman to move the House to address the president." End of quote. So this is where executive privilege was defined. What does executive privilege have in common with King's feudalism in this administration? It started in this meeting in 1792 during the George Washington administration, when Washington, Jefferson, Hamilton, and a couple of others sat down and they had this meeting, and Thomas Jefferson says that if the House is on an inquest, and he meant that in the non-flattering form, that the executive, the president, had an obligation to respond, quote, "as the public good would permit," but also had a right to refuse to release those papers, quote, "the disclosure of which would injure the public," end quote. Now, when they went over the papers that Congress was asking for from George Washington, Washington and Jefferson and these guys, they went over these papers, and they concluded that none of them, as embarrassing as they were to George Washington, because this St. Clair thing was, I mean, hundreds of soldiers had died as a result of this. It was a terribly embarrassing incident for the George Washington administration. As embarrassing as it was, none of those papers would injure the public if they were released. So even though they would injure George Washington's public political reputation, they decided to turn them over to Congress. And they did not withhold any of them. But in the process of coming about to the decision, they said, well, here's what James Madison actually said about it later when he was a congressman, Representative James Madison, on the House floor. He said, and I quote, that the executive had a right under a due responsibility also to withhold information when of a nature that did not permit a disclosure of it at the time. If the executive, that's the president, conceived that in relation to his own department, papers could not be safely communicated, he might on that ground refuse them because he was the competent though responsible judge within his own department. So there were a couple of criteria that were set up. It happened again in the Washington administration with regard to the negotiation of the Jay Treaty. This is another four different times during the Washington administration. The Congress came and sought papers, and four different times they had to sit down and decide whether they were going to turn them over. And what was worked out back then, although it's not part of the Constitution, it's not part of law, this is really kind of tradition, but it's held ever since George Washington, was that, number one, presidents don't have an unlimited right to hold back or conceal information about what they're doing when they're doing the public's business. That Congress has a right to demand it, and that presumably anybody else does, that they are answerable to we the people. And that secondly, really as a matter of common sense, that a president does have the ability to hold back information that might harm the nation if it's released. But it has to be in the public interest. And that therefore the power of inquiry of the legislature is not absolute. And as I said, this phrase executive privilege wasn't actually applied to this doctrine until the administration of Dwight Eisenhower, who invoked executive privilege 40 times. And his vice president, Richard Nixon, of course, turned it into an art form and used it to try to get out of Watergate, which became a mess. And then you've got Ronald Reagan coming along. Here's there's people love to criticize lawyers. Lawyers this, lawyers that. But one of the good things about lawyers is that they've studied the law. And we have in Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush two presidents who never studied the law. One was an actor, one was a businessman. Sort of a businessman. And so they come out with these statements that just indicate, for example, Ronald Reagan, during the Iran-Contra scandal, they asked him if, as the chief law enforcement officer of the nation, he felt that he had the right to break the law. And his response was that, as the chief law enforcement officer of the nation, he was above the law. Which, you know, completely flies in the face of John Marshall, the first U.S. Supreme Court justice, saying that presidents are not English kings. I mean, So anyhow, we've got this executive privilege. And in 1974, in United States versus Nixon, although Rehnquist abstained, the other eight justices unanimously agreed that Richard Nixon's tapes would not harm the nation if he released them. Unanimously agreed. 8-0. And this, of course, sealed Nixon's fate. I mean, this was the end of the Nixon administration, because as soon as he released these tapes, everybody got to hear him conspiring to obstruct an FBI investigation into the Watergate burglar. And, you know, 1 week later, boom, he was packing his bags. But the Supreme Court said those tapes, as horrible as they may be to Richard Nixon's political future, did not rise to the level of harming the United States of America. If you look at the American Heritage Dictionary, executive privilege, the definition, I mean, here's the dictionary definition. The principle that members of the executive branch of government cannot legally be forced to disclose their confidential communications when such disclosure would adversely affect the operations or procedures of the executive branch. Now, here's the kicker. I would suggest that Dick Cheney refusing, first of all, he's not the executive, so theoretically he's not even covered by executive privilege. But secondly, for him to say that he doesn't have to tell us who he met with when they were putting together the energy policy that had to do with Saudi Arabia and the Middle East, it had to do with Enron and all these sleazy deals, it may have had to do with backroom deals about campaign cut. Who knows that when he, that his saying, I don't even have to tell you guys who I met with. Certainly I'm not going to tell you what happened. Probably by now the records have been shredded. That this flies in the face of 227 years of American history. These guys are behaving like kings and feudal lords, not like Democrats, small d, not like you should in a democracy. You're with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home...
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well...
Let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel 6. Dog owners will be happy to know whether your best friend is a purebred show dog or the lovably mixed-up product of a neighborhood indiscretion. They're equally welcome at Motel 6. No judgments here. So put the old Cocker Chow Labrador mix in the back seat and hit the road. But first call 1-800-4-MOTEL-6 or visit motel6.com. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light on for you. And a core hotel.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah!
Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kids. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just
just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What a wonderful, wonderful world this would be. What a wonderful, 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 wonderful world. Don't know much about history.
But we're learning all about history here. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. The folks in our chat room, the Tom Hartman Lunch Bunch, says Zen Pickle. I'm flattered. The if you want to drop in to the chat room, where there's always interesting conversation and some really, truly fine people, just go to TomHartmanShow.com on the Internet and click on the link to the chat link. It'll take you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe, where you can click the chat button, which will drop you into the chat room. And you can have a conversation, see what's going on there. We're talking about executive privilege. And I want to carry this a little bit over the top of the hour. And if people have comments or thoughts or questions about that, you know, you're welcome to call in 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937. Although we do have the news coming up here shortly. But Thomas Jefferson also ran up against this. This is a... You know, one of those human interest things. And I also I want to talk a little more about Thomas Jefferson in the next hour also because the Sally Hemings Memorial Group or the Jefferson, you know, they just got together. Anyhow, we'll get to that. There's an interesting topic there. But Jefferson, when he was president, Aaron Burr was being tried for treason. And Burr, who was facing execution for treason, claimed that there was a letter that Thomas Jefferson had that would prove that he was not guilty. And Jefferson, in fact, had the letter. But Jefferson said that because of the separation of powers, it was inappropriate for a court to force him to turn a letter over to it. At that point, Jefferson hated Burr, and he didn't want to be helping him out. And so this, again, went before the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said that the president was not above the law and compelled Jefferson to turn over the letter. The letter, sure enough, exonerated Burr, and Burr was acquitted. So here we have this history. I mean, it starts with George Washington establishing this precedent and goes into the Thomas Jefferson administration and on right through, that the executive, the president, and those associated with him are not above the law. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those ads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
About the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. CIA Director George Tenet is expected on Capitol Hill sometime this week to try and explain how a controversial sentence got into President Bush's State of the Union address back in January. The president had accused Iraq of trying to buy uranium in Africa, a claim the White House recently said should not have been in the speech since it was actually false. And over the weekend, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice put the blame on Tenet, saying his agency had raised no objections to that statement. On ABC's Good Morning America today, Indiana Democrat Evan Bayh said the credibility of the entire administration is now at stake.
It's still a good thing that Saddam Hussein is gone. He was going to be a threat to the world at some future point. I can't say this was an intentional manipulation, but perhaps a little gilding of the lily.
Bayh said Congress, quote, needs to get to the bottom of what happened. He called CIA Chief Tenet a good man and said it's too soon to determine if he should resign or be fired. Iraq's 25-member governing council held its inaugural meeting yesterday in Baghdad. That body's made up of prominent members representing a broad spectrum of groups throughout the country. United Nations Special Representative in Iraq, Sergio Vieira de Mello, said the gathering's an important step toward democracy.
The capacity of Iraqi leaders to forge the consensus necessary to bring into being the governing council and to forge this consensus in such complex circumstances is an achievement to be recognized, applauded, and nurtured. It is through this consensus, a single-minded unity of purpose and resolve to get Iraq back to where this country deserves to be, that the many challenges facing you will be overcome.
Also, U.S. forces have now started another assault against anti-coalition elements in Iraq. That move comes as one American soldier was killed and six others were hurt when a military convoy they were in was attacked in Baghdad. Witnesses also said at least one U.S. soldier was wounded in a separate attack about 2 hours later. Meanwhile, a group claiming to have ties with Al-Qaeda is claiming responsibility for those recent attacks.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front! Hey, we made it!
Yeah.
4 hours of back-to-back Godzilla movies!
Wait!
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me, my friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss? There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What?
Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
A New Hampshire man is under suspicion of murder, although today he's expected to be charged only with interfering with child custody. The last time his children were seen with Manuel Gehring was during a 4th of July fireworks show. Gehring was located in California earlier this week, but neither his 14-year-old daughter nor his 11-year-old son have been found. British officials are looking for a missing 12-year-old girl they think may be with a U.S. Marine she met online. Siobhan Pennington's been missing since Saturday. Authorities say 31-year-old Toby Studebaker left the military last week and may be heading to Great Britain to meet the girl.
Home Guards and Generals Tuesday on DVD.
Forward!
In a war that divided a nation, they fought with courage.
You are the best brigade!
Faith.
The rest is in God's hands.
And honor.
We will conquer!
The Magnificent Epic is now the DVD, with extras including historical commentaries and featurettes. Jeff Daniels, Stephen Lyon, and Robert Duvall as Robert E. Lee.
Destroy the enemy. God be with you.
Home Guards and Generals Tuesday on DVD and video. Rated PG-13 for sustained battle sequences.
Hurricane warnings in effect now along the Texas Gulf Coast as Tropical Storm Claudette is on the move and headed that way. A tropical storm warning was in effect for north of San Luis Pass to Cameron, Louisiana. Alan Moeller with the National Weather Service in Dallas says it's unclear, though, just how strong the system will be when Claudette finally makes landfall.
Right now, they're maintaining that it probably will be just below hurricane strength when it comes inland, but that is subject to great change if the winds in the very upper levels of the atmosphere weaken considerably the next couple of days. It could intensify very rapidly.
That storm is expected to make landfall tomorrow or possibly early Wednesday. Current maximum sustained winds of Claudette are about 65 miles an hour. And high temperatures are making it tough on firefighters throughout Colorado as they battle to put out about 7,000 acres of wildfires. Some of those fires are said to be partially contained now. The biggest in Colorado is the Brush Mountain Fire north of Grand Junction. That fire is up to 4,500 acres now and is reportedly about 35% contained. I'm Corey Morris. This is IE America Radio Network News. We'll be right back.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Sagittarius, Capricorn, Cancer. All sun signs that astrologists claim tell us something about a person. Cars have signs, too, that tell us if they're stolen. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. Ah, spring, birds, flowers, and that blanket of pollen fuzz on your car. There's got to be a way to protect that shiny paint of your ride. And there is. A car cover made from the standard in car cover fabric, Block It by Kimberly-Clark. Research shows that car cover owners are so happy with their car covers, they buy them all over again. So make sure you get the best Block It car cover fabric from Kimberly-Clark. Why have you waited so long? Block It by Kimberly-Clark. Blue nautical signs say smooth sailing. Yellow yield signs say slow down. Here are some red-hot signs that indicate the used car you're considering may be stolen. The vehicle identification number, or VIN number, on the title and on the car itself don't match. And the engine ID number is scratched off. License plates or plate bolts are brand new. Ignition switches feel loose. And keys are copies, not originals. Be aware, knowing these signs of red-hot theft can help you keep your hard-earned green. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, speaking for the radical middle. The words right and left have been so abused by the neoconservatives that they no longer have meaning, but the average person in America still knows what they want, what's best for America. I'm calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on when corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people getting less. Where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed. Where people could work to get ahead, but at the same time we didn't leave people starving in the streets. The core of my show is the news of the week. Through the lens of the most recent news, we'll explore the forces that are shaping our nation and world and the spin that's being put on them by corporate-owned media and corporate-owned politicians. In this context, I invite you to call 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Let us know what you think. Our question, we're sticking with this just a little bit longer from this last hour. What does executive privilege have in common with King's feudalism and this administration? And we're broadcasting live on radio stations across the country here on the IE America Radio Network, and also broadcasting from the internet on radiopower.org and ieamericaradio.com and archived at whiterosesociety.org. Our quote for the day from John F. Kennedy: "The very word secrecy," John Kennedy said, "is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are as a people inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings." End of quote, John Kennedy. So in a letter dated January 30th, 2002, Comptroller General David Walker, the head of the Nonpartisan Government Accounting Office, announced that he would sue Vice President Dick Cheney. I'm reading from a Find Law commentary by Michael C. Dorf, a brief history of executive privilege from George Washington through Dick Cheney. In a letter dated January 30th, 2002, the Comptroller General, the head of the GAO, says he's going to sue the Vice President in order to obtain information about the National Energy Policy Development Group, NEPDG, that Cheney chaired last year. Now, it's interesting. So far, Cheney has not claimed executive privilege, nor has Bush. They've simply said, sorry. We ain't going to tell you. And in this commentary in Find Law, he says, the author and attorney, Michael Dorff, says, nor is it clear, even assuming the court chooses to hear the Comptroller General's case, that the vice president can assert executive privilege. The Constitution vests the executive power in the president. So long as the president remains healthy, the vice president has no constitutionally assigned executive function. As far as the Constitution is concerned, the vice president's role is legislative in nature, to preside over and break ties in the Senate. And then they go on to say the Comptroller General has not at this point really gotten into that. In fact, they haven't even asked for any information about what was said or done at the meeting. All they've asked for so far is a list of who attended. And Dorff wraps up saying, finally, no case to this point holds that executive privilege applies to conversations between executive officials and persons outside the government, such as corporate officers of Enron or other companies. In other words, even if executive privilege applied, then history indicates that executive privilege would cover, for example, a conversation between the president and one of his cabinet members, or a personal correspondence that had to do within the government, as in the Aaron Burr case, between, that was a member of the cabinet and the president. But between a vice president and a corporation? Big question. 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937 is the number if you'd like to call in and be on the Tom Hartman program today. Richard in Durham, North Carolina, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Richard?
I'm good, thanks. Hey, it's my first chance to get to talk to you. I took a day off today, and your article about drowning democracy in a bathtub, where you talked about Grover Norquist, really kind of was a wake-up call to me, and I've really been kind of giving myself a crash course in economics and tax policy and everything else so I can make informed decisions and argument in an intelligent way with these people. And you've helped a lot. Your show helps a lot, too.
Well,
I had a question for you today. One argument I hear a lot that I don't have a good argument against right now is these companies who reincorporate overseas in Bermuda or wherever to avoid U.S. taxes, even though it's in the U.S. where they make all their profits. And I know that even when I think a couple of Democratic congressmen have tried to introduce bills to prevent these companies from being eligible for government contracts, and those bills have
That's
been
right.
defeated by Republicans. Can you give me a couple of good arguments against reincorporation and maybe some resources where I can do some more reading?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question, Richard, and an important one. Halliburton was one of the companies actually that did this. I mean, Enron turned it into a religion. They created over 900 offshore companies that were various tax havens, and then whenever they had profitable divisions, they dumped them in those companies. Whenever they had profit losing divisions, they put them in their U.S. companies. And so, the 4 out of the last 5 years before Enron melted down, not only did they not pay taxes, but they actually got tax money back from the government from these various deals, these tax credits, that is cash from the government that you get for oil exploration and things like that. So anyhow, in answer to your question, what do you say to people who say there's nothing wrong with that? The answer is very simple. What we have in the United States and what every government has is an abstraction, a government, that is to say, a government is not a physical thing. It's something that exists by consensus, as is a corporation, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that the government of the United States exists of, by, and for its people. We collectively create it. We get to decide what are going to be the rules of conduct. Now, within the government, We authorize, or through the government that we create, we authorize ourselves, that is through our government, to authorize people to play particular games. One of the games is let's make money. And there's a couple of different ways that we authorize people to play that game. People can play that game, and people can play the, oh, let's be religious game, and they can start churches. And we provide them with legal structure to do that. And with the word, let's be civic, and they can start a nonprofit organization. And we provide them with a legal structure to do that. And when we authorize people to play the let's make money game, we set the rules. We, the government. We do that. We, the people. And not only do we set the rules, but we also provide them with the infrastructure on which they make that money. In other words, when Halliburton makes, you know, it's millions of dollars. Halliburton, of course, also created all these offshore corporations during Dick Cheney's reign. He aggressively pursued the creation of offshore tax havens with Halliburton and wiped out much of their tax liability. When these corporations are doing business in the United States, even though they have as their corporate headquarters a post office box in Bermuda, they're really doing business here in the United States.
Right.
They're making profit here in the United States. They're doing it drawing on resources that you and I have paid into. They're taking an educated labor force that we've paid for with public education. They're using public roads that we've paid for with our taxes.
Mm-hmm.
They're making use of a public health care system. If somebody gets injured, public hospitals. They're flying for their business meetings on an air traffic system that we're paying for out of our tax dollars, the air traffic control system and airports. Their factories require water. I mean, even as just drinking water that's paid for as municipal utilities. They're generating sewage. That's all of this stuff. This is all the public infrastructure, and it all comes out of our collective contribution. So it's entirely appropriate for us, Richard. It's entirely appropriate for us to say to a corporation, if you want to do business in this country, you're going to have to pay taxes. If you want to enjoy the benefits of democracy and of the infrastructure, the banking system that we've created, the governmental licensing, the ability to even exist, which is provided for by government that's paid for, then you're going to have to pay for it. How's that for a rant?
When people make this argument that it's the high cost of U.S. labor or regulation or taxes that drives these companies overseas, they're really dismissing the whole idea that if they had to actually sit down and write a check for a private police department or private fire departments or to build the roads and provide the infrastructure, that they'd be worse off than they are right now.
Well, these are two separate issues. I thought maybe I should have done a better reality check. I thought you were talking about corporations that reincorporate overseas in order to not pay taxes here.
Well, yeah, that too. I just see it as two different sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Trying to enjoy the benefits of being U.S. citizens or U.S. incorporated or businesses that do business in the United States, but avoiding the obligations, whether it's paying employees a fair wage or paying taxes.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the ways that corporations get around, you know, having to pay a fair wage in the United States is by going overseas where labor is cheaper. And up until, within our lifetimes, up until the last 30, 40 years, it's been a kind of a creeping thing ever since Reagan came into office, but arguably since Eisenhower, but particularly since Reagan. And then, of course, Bill Clinton blew the doors open with GATT and NAFTA.
Right.
Up until that point, we had ways of basically protecting labor in the United States. There was one of those consensuses that I talk about that is government, that is we the people, is that as Henry Ford pointed out, Henry Ford, interestingly, the right wing anti-Semitic nutcase, Henry Ford, the original,
mm-hmm.
Paid his workers many times more than the going wage in that area of Detroit and Dearborn, because he said he wanted his own employees to be able to afford to buy his cars. George Soros points this out also, and Goldsmith, Sir James Goldsmith, wrote a brilliant book, the title of which escapes me at the moment, all about these topics, and that is that one of the things that the purpose of civil society and of doing business in civil society is that to support society, that is to support culture, to support civilization, to support we the people in a way. In other words, here's the big debate. Do we allow people to play the game, let's make money, purely to make money, regardless of the consequences, regardless of who gets hurt? Or do we allow people to play the game, let's make money, in order to further the goal of having a civil society? And for the first 200 years, more or less, of the United States, the latter was the definition, with the exception of the Gilded Age from about 1870 to around 1910. And now we're coming back to that Gilded Age mentality, which is called feudalism. Thanks for the call, Richard. You're helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense and the radical middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
You're strapped into 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Use as directed.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Is our president a liar? Well, even if you're a Bush backer, you have to admit he's never going to win the Little George Washington I Cannot Tell a Fib award. George W. would never admit to being an out-and-out liar, but he has certainly spent a lifetime as a deflector, deflecting inconvenient truth as routinely as a Teflon pan rejects sticky food. For example, here's a sticky question. Even though he was a hawkish supporter of U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War, did he dodge service in that war by using his famous family's political connections to cut in line ahead of thousands of other young men who were seeking slots in the Air National Guard, thus allowing young George to spend his war years defending Houston against the Viet Cong? Bush deflects the truth by impatiently declaring that no member of his family intervened with officials to give him a special break. Come on, George. You know that families of privilege don't leave fingerprints by seeking such favors directly. Instead, the dirty work in this case was handled by Sid Adger, an oil man neighbor of the Bushes, who called the Speaker of the Texas House of Representatives at the time, getting him to call the head of the Texas Guard, and shazam, George zipped to the front of the line. Well, says a defiant Bush, the Guard is a legitimate branch of the military, and I'm proud of my service there. More deflection. No one is challenging the legitimacy of the Guard, George. The challenge is how you pull political rank to get into it. And, by the way, if you were so proud of being there, why and how were you able to go AWOL for a year of your National Guard duty, simply disappearing and not reporting for your assignments? This is Jim Hightower saying, those who now wonder whether Bush is blatantly lying to us about everything from weapons of mass destruction in Iraq to the true impact of his tax giveaways to the rich, you need only look to his past record. George never lies, but he's an inveterate deflector of the truth.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Taking aim at the right-wing nonsense out there. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Well, Richard in Durham, thank you for that call. I appreciate it. I you you got me started on one of my favorite topics, and it really is the issue why do we allow business to exist? Why do we allow, you know, or anything else? We the people, as a government. First of all, why do we allow government to exist? I mean, these are the questions that the founders struggled with. What kind of government do we want to have? What sort of thing are we bringing into creation here? In fact, if I could find my where's my notes from that thing that I was writing yesterday? Is this it right here? No, it's not. Rats. Well, I'll come across it here. Rats. Anyhow. Back to the question, what does executive privilege have in common with King's feudalism in this administration? Pardon the digression there. The Cheney situation is particularly problematic because he can't really claim executive privilege because he's not the president. But also, what if the meeting was about Iraq? We know that in 1998, Dick Cheney signed a document called the Project for a New American Century, calling on Bill Clinton to invade Iraq, to seize its oil, because oil was so essential to the security of the United States of America. And by the way, setting aside the intellect or morality of coming up with national security policy based on fossil fuels, it seems to me as not a particularly bright thing to do, given that fossil fuels, you know, they're not making them anymore. They're fossils. You're going to run out 20 or 30 years at some point, maybe 40, 50, who knows. But at some point, we're going to run out. And that's no, I mean, this is no way to define a policy, but let's say that that they actually could make that case. And this is what I think these folks are really believing. I think that they really believe that the security of this country depends on access to oil. Keep in mind, I mean, Condoleezza Rice has an oil tanker named after her. You know, Cheney, Halliburton Oil Company, Bush, Harkin Oil Company, and on it goes, that they really believe that our security depends on our having oil. And so what if the meeting was about going after Iraq? It would make perfect sense. I mean, Cheney had was on record in 98, signed the document along with Pearl and Wolfowitz and others saying, yeah, let's attack Iraq. Let's go after him. So now we have Dick Cheney's task force has not even turned over, in response to all of this, has not even turned over a summary of the documents that they want to keep confidential. Now, there is a certain kind of bizarre quality to all this, because at the same time that this administration is saying, well, you know, we've got to keep this stuff quiet for national security purposes, they are enthusiastically releasing Clinton documents that it would embarrass Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton had a conversation with Barak, the former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, about the Mark Rich pardon. And the Bush administration was asked for a copy of that, and poof, they produced it. Now, there was a conversation a few days earlier that Clinton pointed out would have made him look good. The Bush administration said they couldn't release that one. That was classified. Here with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The melting of snow and ice at the top of the world could change the weather everywhere. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The ice cover on the Arctic Ocean is disappearing, and temperatures inside the Arctic Circle have been going up for several decades. Many scientists say these are the first signs of global warming, and they say the changes in the far north will be felt around the world. Mark Serez is an atmospheric scientist at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and he monitors Arctic conditions for the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Serez says the frigid climate of the North Pole is a key element of some of the world's dominant weather patterns. These patterns are shaped by the circulation of air between the equator and the poles. Warm, moist air is constantly moving away from the equator and toward the poles. At the same time, cold, dense air is moving away from polar regions and toward the equator. Serez says this could change with the melting of snow and ice inside the Arctic Circle.
Well, if we start to change the snow and ice cover, we start to change the strength of that cold pole. What will happen then is that we will have responses of the global circulation to the changes that we see in the Arctic. The key here is that the global climate really very strongly depends on the strength of this cold pole. You change that cold pole, the strength of that, the atmospheric circulation changes, this can have global ramifications.
For example, warmer temperatures in the Arctic could change the atmospheric patterns that make westerly winds so common across much of North America. Serez says the warming climate in the far north might lead to more precipitation inside the Arctic Circle. That, in turn, could affect the temperature and salinity of the Arctic Ocean and the North Atlantic. Changes like that could affect great ocean currents such as the Gulf Stream and alter climates around the world. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I ain't looking to compete with you, beat or cheat or mistreat you, simplify you, pacify you, deny, defy, or crucify you. All I really wanna do.
And welcome back to Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations on the Sirius Radio Satellite Channel 145. And they now have a home receiver, actually, that you can pick up as well. I saw, actually, there was a review of it just a couple days ago in one of the magazines, Time or Newsweek, like that. And also broadcasting live on the Internet, radiopower.org and IEAmericaRadio.com. Happy Bastille Day. Today is the 4th of July of France. It's the anniversary of the storming of the notorious prison, the Bastille, which was the beginning of the French Revolution. And so I don't have the French national anthem music here to play. Just figured this out just before we went on the air, but anyhow, happy Bastille Day. 1-800-TALK-YES is the number if you'd like to be on the program. 1-800-825-5937. And Roy from Rio Rancho is on the line. I assume, Roy, that's in New Mexico?
Good morning, Tom. Yes, it is in New Mexico.
Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's terrific to hear you. I love nice rational argument. What I like about your comments, Tom, is even when I don't agree with them, I get to think about them.
Oh, good.
And then sometimes I change my mind, and sometimes I reconfirm my decisions.
Okay.
And that
good.
Makes it
well, that's
fun.
How it should work. Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to point out when you're talking about the government secrecy and the confident executive privilege and all this is nothing new for Bush. He put his governor's papers, for crying out loud, and put them under lock and key. They can't
right, and his father's
access
as well.
Them.
Yeah.
And that's for Texas, for crying out loud. Is that talking about their education strategy that has been such a dismal failure down there? Or maybe the things about the executions, or maybe just the contributions, or, I don't know what it would be. Maybe it was Kenny Boyd that said, hey, why don't you lock this stuff up? Otherwise, we're both going to get in trouble.
Yeah. It was in today's paper, actually. There was, I think it was either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, there was an interesting article about how the Houston school system, which had
right.
just won some big award and the best in the world and all this kind of thing, turns
hey,
out they've
do
been
that
cooking
with
Enron
numbers.
That's right. They've been cooking the books. They've been kids that drop out, they call them transfers.
You know, and the people that gripe about the Patriot Act, they had free speech zones across from the governor's mansion. You couldn't get out. I remember people getting arrested at the sidewalk, picketing in front of the governor's mansion in Austin. This is nothing new. It's just carried to a higher extreme.
Yeah, and the free speech zones thing really shocked me. I'm astounded that there hasn't been more of an outcry. I have not seen anybody in the national media, raising a flag about that. I mean, the last national leader in the last 100 years to fence in protest, to allow protests within a fenced in area was Adolf Hitler. He did that.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it is just so bizarre and so, and it gets lost down the memory hole. It's like if it's not reported, it doesn't happen, and because people.
Yeah.
You can tell them, and no. But it happened so frequently. To me, that was when it made me against George Bush. I didn't know who I was going to vote for, but when I heard him locking up the stuff in Texas and then the protesters and the picketers getting arrested, it was like, uh-uh.
Yeah.
It just didn't make
well,
any
Roy,
sense at all.
You know, we can kind of work each other up into a lather here, but...
well, it's just a case of, it's getting the word out. It is not new. I guess that's the part that bothers me most of all. They're not doing anything today that they weren't doing 6 months ago, two years ago, or 4 years ago. The whole thing about this 19 words in the State of the Union address, that's like walking up to a car that's just been hit by a diesel train and saying, golly, look at that, how torn up that airbag is.
Right, yeah. It's,
and that's
it's,
all they're focusing on is how torn up the airbag is.
Right,
it
it's,
is.
Yeah, that's the point I've been making for a couple
of weeks. But anyway, enjoy the show.
So,
keep it up.
Thank you, Roy. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, and appreciate your comments there. 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. I've got an interesting letter that was published in the Santa Fe, New Mexico paper in response to an article that I wrote in that paper that I want to get to in just a second. But in the meantime, we've got Matt in Detroit on the line about energy policies. Matt, welcome to the program. Welcome aboard.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Matt.
The question I had, I was sort of wondering what your views were on sort of renewable energy sources. In particular, there was an article posted on Common Dreams a couple weeks ago that wind power in particular was maturing to the point where it could have, power, say, the entire world's needs with the current technology and the available, say, land space to put in wind farms. And I think in particular, Germany, is the biggest user of it, and you had lived there, so I was wondering if you had some comments on that.
Well, when I lived in Germany, I never saw any wind farms. I know that there were some. Most of them, I think, are up in the north, and I live sort of in the middle of the country in south of Nuremberg. But the and there was an article in the paper, I think today or yesterday, about how England is they're having some sort of a NIMBY battle, you know, a not in my backyard battle about putting these things up, as they did off Martha's Vineyard. But yeah, it's a technology whose time has come, and the other big thing is solar. Back when I wrote Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight in 1997, I pointed out the problem that how are we going to make solar cells if you can't generate enough electricity with solar cells to run the blast furnace necessary to melt the glass to make the solar cells? You know, in this kind of thing, how can you make the steel for a windmill if the windmill doesn't generate enough power to make the steel to make a future windmill? And this is something that a lot of people have been concerned about for some time. But just in the last year, there's been a tenfold increase in the efficiency of solar cells. There's been significant doublings of the efficiency of windmills. I forget how often. I think about every 3 years now over the last decade or two, you know, with not just new technology that has to do with the propeller and the computers that control the angle at which it slices into the wind, but also in the motors. There are the generators, you know, the generating technology. So, you know, lots of new stuff there. So, I think that is... a tremendous future for America, and we are going to be forced to, in a very uncomfortable and unpleasant way, or we can, you know, in a very positive and proactive way, be looking at these alternative energy sources. But they're absolutely there.
Well, and, I would also think it would create somewhat of a new industry and jobs, et cetera. You know,
sure.
I mean, I don't think it's going to replace coal plants, but you need to add to the existing infrastructure.
Yeah, no, it's going to, I mean, hopefully we'll do it as a gradual transition. That way it would work, and that's what Jimmy Carter was trying to bring about back, you know, during his administration. And it's what Ronald Reagan put a screeching halt to when his first official act of office as president was to remove the solar collectors from the roof of the White House that Jimmy Carter had put there, and then canceled the energy tax credits and tax incentives to both individual homeowners to make their homes more efficient and to companies that wanted to get into the alternative energy business as a way of paying off his benefactors in the energy industry, which are the same folks that Dick Cheney's trying to cover up here. Matt, thanks for the call. I appreciate the comment. Woody in Beaumont, Texas is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Woody, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Hey, Woody. I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Well, I'm doing good. I always enjoy listening to your program. Listen, you've been hitting so many hot buttons, so I just want to touch on a couple of things. You know, the whole thing with the governor's mansion there in Austin, you know the gates of the governor's mansion open right onto a busy street. And really, there's a bunch of issues there as far as moving people across the street. It's for their own safety. It's also so they don't congest traffic on a busy street. And there's some security issues there also. It's not unreasonable. And it's not unlike Bill Clinton blocking off Pennsylvania Avenue.
Okay.
We're not fencing them in. We're protecting them more than anything.
Okay.
Now, on this energy issue, you know, there's really three different things going on in the energy thing. You've got exploration, production, and refining. There are three different things there that make it.
Well, and then you've got
policy.
Transportation and retailing also.
Right. But I'm just saying, you've got some guy who's going to go out there and look for it. Some guy who's going to produce it once it's found, and some guy who's going to refine it into other products. And when you get these guys together, sometimes with the large corporations like Mobil, Exxon, Chevron, whoever, they may have their finger in all three pots. But a lot of your exploration is done by independents. It's a very risky venture, risky capital type deal. The production stuff is regulated, heavily regulated, like in Texas, by the Railroad Commission, which tells you exactly how much oil you can take out of each well every month. And so it's kind of risky because you never know what the Railroad Commission, who are all publicly elected people, are going to let you do, because it behooves the state of Texas to keep the price up. It's kind of like Texas' equivalent of OPEC, because they derive so many of their tax dollars from oil revenue. But, I mean, when
What's
you go
point,
out there, the big issue here is refining. One of the reasons gasoline prices are higher than they used to be is we don't have enough refining space. And you brought up the NIMBY issue. It's not in my backyard. Now, I live in Beaumont, Texas, which is refinery central. About 30% of all the gasoline in the country rolls through my backyard. And
we
derive a lot of economic benefit from that, but I don't think you'd be surprised that a lot of people don't want a refinery in their town. And so I think the part of this whole energy thing, when they were going out looking at that, and the reason they wanted to keep that secret is just to try to avoid reactions. If they go out there and they talk to these guys about where are some of your prospective sites where you might like to build a refinery, or what kind of tax credits do you need to go look for oil, things like that. You know, if you were to let that information out for a lot of these companies, which are publicly traded, it could impact their stock prices, say, one way or the other. Who knows? It's just a situation where it's probably better off if the general public doesn't know, because what you're trying to get from these guys is their unvarnished and objective comments without the fear of any kind of repercussions for giving you that information.
I understand what you're saying, Woody, but I really have to strongly disagree and say that I don't believe that the function of government is to protect the profitability of any particular corporation or industry, and that if some group of people don't want something in their backyard and there's a larger good at stake, that let's have that debate out in the public, as we did with the situation in New Mexico, as I recall, or Nevada, with nuclear waste. I mean, this is not the first time that NIMBY issues have come up. There's a long, long history. So you know, I just, that doesn't wash for me. I'm sorry.
Everybody wants the benefit, but nobody wants the
I understand that. I understand that, and I'm right there with you. You know, it's people. If we want to have the lifestyle, we have to be willing to pay the price for it. I agree with you, but I don't think that justifies hiding from the American people at meetings of that kind. Woody, thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling in. 1-800-TALK. Yes is our number. 825-5937. Guy in Piedmont, Alabama, is on the line. Guy, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Guy.
I just was listening to the bit about the fuel and the gas, and I wanted to say this. You know, our problem with fuel is that we've had the replacements. And right now they're researching a fuel cell that was invented by NASA back in 1956 or 7.
Sure.
And it doesn't do crap. And I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but there was a multi-fuel engine that the servers bought up. They had to buy them up because we were going to run a test. We drove vehicles of all sizes all over this country running on hydrogen, the perfect fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was paid for by the Democratic Congress. Mm-hmm. And then they found out they'd lose the taxes on fossil fuel, and they buried it.
Well, why couldn't they tax hydrogen?
Say what?
Why can't you tax hydrogen? I mean, the taxes on fossil fuels, first of all, are not a source of general revenue for the government, by and large. They mostly just pay for the roads that are used by the vehicles that use the fossil fuels. So it's not like it's generating some kind of surplus. So if you're going to have people drive hydrogen vehicles over the same public roads still have to be paid for, so why not tax hydrogen?
Well, they should have taxed hydrogen.
Yeah. See, I think that if we move into alternatives, or as we move into alternatives, they're just going to have to recalibrate these things, you know, and hopefully it can be done in a common sense way. I think that this is more about protecting industries, and those industries having inappropriate control over politicians, because we've allowed corporations to have rights that corporations shouldn't have, to participate in the political process that should be limited to human beings who live and breathe and can vote. And that these corporations have been messing with our political structures, and as a consequence of this, we've got all these distortions, and there's nothing that even remotely resembles a free market going on, particularly with regard to energy in the United States.
Oh, yeah. So. And you know that we invented the hydrogen-powered hydroelectric plant before we invented the first atomic plant. And right now, England is building a hydrogen hydroelectric plant.
That's interesting. You mean a hydro plant that generates hydrogen from the electricity that they generate from the water flowing over it?
No. They burn hydrogen instead of atomic fuel.
Oh, I see.
To make the electricity.
Yeah.
In fact, the ponds that are out there by the electric plant, that comes from a hydrogen power plant design.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good information, Guy. Thank you for calling. I appreciate your comments, and you know, this is what democracy is all about. People say, we don't live in a democracy. Well, yes, yeah. This is what democracy is all about.
The problem with democracy is a two-party system.
Now, go ahead, Guy.
You you can't. The two-party system is just eating us alive. The Democrats had power for 50 years, and they really screwed things up.
And now the Republicans are fixing to do the same. Guy, I agree with you. We've got some serious problems here with our political system. We're not going to solve it by, I mean, we're stuck with a two-party system because it's built into our Constitution. We've got winner-take-all, first-past-the-post electoral systems, and until we get to instant runoff voting, we're stuck with that. But the big problem, in my opinion, is that we have given rights to groups beyond just humans for whom rights were defined in the Constitution. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home...
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well...
Let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
The Long Ride Home by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between 14 hours in a minivan, between the world's largest pothole and the hubcap that got away. Between 5, look at the horses. About 50, I have to go to the bathrooms. And one amazing sunset. Somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
Call 1-800-800-8000 or visit super8.com. All Super 8 Motels are individually owned and operated.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I want to
different...
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephens, good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Anna?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've been talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear my one program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, when he does that.
Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. The Santa Fe, what is it, The Sun? Is that the newspaper? I don't recall. I've got it clipped out here in front of me. They've run a few of the pieces that I've written on commondreams.org. If you go to commondreams.org and scroll down to my name, Tom Hartman, down there in the right-hand bottom right-hand corner where they have all the contributors, and click on my name, it'll give you a list of all of the articles. You can also find them at tomhartman.com if you just click on the list of articles. And, the El Dorado Sun. And Enrique Montoya of Santa Fe wrote in a letter to the editor comparing Bush to Hitler. Since the planning of the invasion of Iraq, George W. Bush has been compared to Adolf Hitler. I want to put this comparison to rest once and forever. Hitler was unrivaled in fascist brutality, and Bush has been termed the compassionate conservative. Let's go back to their youth. Hitler was born into a middle-class family, and Bush was born into an affluent family, which could afford him all the advantages. However, both Hitler and Bush were poor students, but the similarities seemed to end there. And continuing on with a letter from Enrique, Hitler had an illicit affair with his niece that resulted in her suicide. Bush only paid for his college girlfriend's abortion. Hitler was a World War I hero. Bush was AWOL for a year from the Alabama National Guard. Hitler was a failed artist who got into politics. Bush was a failed businessman who got into politics. Hitler was jailed for revolution. Bush was jailed for driving while intoxicated. Hitler was considered an evil genius. Bush has been called an evil idiot. Bush thought he was a god. Bush thinks he talks to God. Hitler won his election as chancellor, but only by one vote. That for years has been called election fraud. Bush, we have found out, actually lost the vote in Florida. Both politicians immediately pushed their extremist agendas. Hitler gained the support of Christian churches to push his anti-Judaism agenda. Bush was offered an anti-Islamic agenda by Christian churches. Hitler officially suspended civil rights in Germany. Bush has the Patriot Act, which unofficially suspends them. Hitler pushed to have Nazi judges at all levels. Bush is pushing for conservative judges. Hitler started the rearmament of Germany. Bush favors Star Wars. Hitler scoffed at world opinion when he occupied Austria and then Czechoslovakia. Bush ignored the United Nations entirely. Hitler was given financial support by U.S. Senator Prescott Bush. George W. Bush could not use his grandfather's money since it had been seized by Roosevelt for Prescott's trading with the enemy. And on it goes. It's an interesting article. Stay tuned. We'll be back. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for joining us.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. Tropical storm Claudette is heading toward Texas, and those living along the Gulf Coast are bracing for strong winds and heavy rains. Hurricane watches and tropical storm warnings are posted for much of the area. When Claudette makes landfall late tomorrow or early Wednesday, forecasters predict it will be as a hurricane. The U.S. death toll in post-war Iraq stands at 32 combat-related fatalities following another attack on American troops. In this latest incident, a convoy in Baghdad was targeted by rocket-propelled grenades and machine guns. A group claiming to be an Iraqi branch of Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for the series of attacks on coalition forces. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan is scheduled to meet with President Bush at the White House today. Secretary of State Colin Powell says there's much to talk about on the international stage.
He comes on a regular basis to meet with the president, and I'm sure we will talk about Iraq, and we will talk about the reconstruction efforts in Iraq.
Meanwhile, Annan is hoping for a quick decision from President Bush on a possible deployment of U.S. peacekeeping troops in Liberia. A New Hampshire man suspected in the disappearance of his two children is set to be arraigned today in California. The last time the 41-year-old was seen with his children was at an Independence Day event in Concord, New Hampshire. He was found in California late last week, but his 11-year-old son and 14-year-old daughter are still missing and presumed dead. Four-time defending Tour de France champ Lance Armstrong is holding on to the overall lead. Armstrong finished fourth in today's ninth stage of the Tour de France, but it was enough for the 31-year-old to retain the leader's yellow jersey. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 124 points at 92.43, the Nasdaq up 31 points, and the S&P up 15 points.
You know, MTV changed the way people look at television. Well, I helped change the way they look at MTV. I'm Lauren Lazen, Vice President of MTV News and Specials. I'm responsible for those documentaries on racism and drugs, sexual abuse and AIDS. You know, the ones that make some people uncomfortable, but make everybody think. I'm not uncomfortable speaking up for my ideas. Never have been. Even in school, where it wasn't always cool for a girl to be smart, my parents expected great things from me, so I did too. If you have a daughter, encourage her to stand up and be heard in school. Let her know it's cool to be smart, even in front of boys. Tell her to go for it, and then let her. Expect the best from a girl. That's what you'll get.
Help your daughter speak up for her ideas in school. Call 1-800-WCC-4GIRLS. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the Women's College Coalition.
In an effort to repair its tarnished image, the New York Times has named Bill Keller as its new executive editor. Keller joined the Times in 1984 and won a Pulitzer in 1989 for his work covering the Soviet Union. Howell Raines resigned earlier this year after it was discovered that reporter Jason Blair fabricated dozens of stories and was even promoted while Raines was in charge. Today's selection of Keller ends a six-week search for a new executive editor at the Times.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours, so what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out, because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
Iran's president has ordered four ministers to investigate the death of an Iranian-Canadian journalist who was arrested after taking photos outside a Tehran prison. There are conflicting reports about what caused Zehra Kazemi's death. Roxana Saberi reports from Tehran.
Iran's President Mohammad Khatami has asked the country's interior, intelligence, justice, and culture ministers to look into the freelance photojournalist's death. He has asked them to determine the reasons for her death and who was responsible for it. Montreal-based Zahra Kazemi was a Canadian of Iranian descent. She died Friday of what friends and relatives say were head injuries, but an Iranian official says she died of a brain stroke after reporting discomfort. Authorities had detained 54-year-old Kazemi last month for taking pictures of Tehran's Evin prison, where many dissidents are jailed. Canada's ambassador to Tehran has raised the case with Iranian officials. The two sides have also discussed a request by Kazemi's family that her body be returned to Canada for an autopsy. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with another Car Clinic Minute. James Dean, French food, playing hooky. All bad things that are oh so good. But, like the little girl with a curl on her forehead, bad gasoline is horrid. When I come back, I'll tell you why.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered the company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com.
You may get Crepe Suzette out of your system by exercising, but bad gasoline in your car's system does long-lasting damage. As gasoline evaporates, it deposits harmful sludge which interacts with metals in your car's fuel system, causing gas to go rancid. Stale gas looks cloudy, smells like paint thinner, and gunks up your car's fuel injectors. Like too much French food clogs your arteries. So do what James Dean would. Go heavy on the Bernays sauce, but keep your tank filled with fresh gas. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system, available now as standard equipment, or soon to be, in Ford, Chrysler, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Mazda, Land Rover, Dodge, Jeep, Mini, Volkswagen, Audi, Nissan, Infiniti, and Jaguar automobiles. And streaming live on the internet from radiopower.org, iamericaradio.com, and archived at whiterosesociety.org. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Our quote for the day from John Kennedy, the very word, he said, the very word, secrecy, is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. Been talking the last hour or so here about Dick Cheney and his little secrets. Well, let's get on to some of the secrets of the fast food industry and what we eat. Award-winning journalist Eric Schlosser is a correspondent for the Atlantic Monthly. His first book, Fast Food Nation, has been on the New York Times bestseller list for over a year and has appeared on the bestseller list of the L.A. Times, San Francisco Chronicle, Boston Globe, Washington Post, USA Today, but Publishers Weeklies, among others. He's currently at work on a book about the American prison system. Eric, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm glad to have you on here. I think we're both broadcasting from the People's Republic of Vermont here today.
It's a wonderful place, too. It really is.
It truly is. I agree. Are we what we eat?
You know, not entirely, but a large part of us is. And in looking at fast food, you know, I'm really looking at American society, and the food industry is such an important part of the United States. It encompasses so many parts of it. I mean, the working conditions and labor, and you know, it's different from a stereo or any other consumer purchase in that this commodity, fast food, goes into your body and literally becomes part of you.
Right. Yeah. You noted that the fast food industry's survival depends on low wage, no union, minimal standards for labor, a continuous existence of cheap labor. And it appears that this administration is hell-bent for leather on making more and more of that available, on wiping out the middle class and destroying the unions and creating a ruling plutocracy and a large serf class of labor. My sense I got from reading some of what you've written is that if there was to be a resurgence of unions or of just, fair labor practices, the fast food industry would be in trouble. But if not, then they might do very well. Am I diagnosing this correctly? And if so,
the major fast food chains, McDonald's, KFC, Taco Bell, Burger King, they have all deliberately pursued a labor model that requires large numbers of unskilled workers working part-time for very low wages. And that's how they've set up their business model. And it is true that those companies I just mentioned are dependent on that kind of workforce. And a lot of my book is critical of those developments. They're very, very close with the right wing of the Republican Party, the fast food industry and the restaurant industry. They oppose any increase in the minimum wage. And they're very vehement about opposing any overtime improvements. And so the recent cutback in overtime that the Bush administration has just pushed through is terrific for the fast food industry.
Suddenly everybody becomes a manager of Burger King.
But having said that, towards the end of my book, I look at another fast food chain that is extremely successful and extremely profitable, which is In-N-Out Burger in California and in Nevada. And I'm not a paid spokesman for them, but they've pursued a completely different labor model in which they don't have a very high turnover rate. They provide benefits to their workers. They pay the highest wages in the industry. And the managers and assistant managers are very, very well compensated. And this restaurant chain is extremely profitable. They've just pursued a different business model. And what the McDonald's labor control system gives them is enormous power over their workers because that's what they don't want skilled workers. Skilled workers you have to pay well and listen to. So there was a deliberate decision on the part of these big companies to go a certain route. And in the book I argue there was nothing inevitable about it, and it isn't even necessary today to make a profit.
Now, the folks at McDonald's would say that In-N-Out Burger is a nice little success story, but just wait until they get bought up by us.
Yeah. The people at McDonald's would love to buy In-N-Out Burger, and unfortunately, In-N-Out Burger is still run by the family that founded it about 50 years ago now, and unfortunately, it looks like it may go on the market at some point soon, and every one of these other fast food chains would love to buy it because they're selling the same food, but they are more profitable per restaurant than any other fast food chain.
And how would they're changing their labor practices? Let's say McDonald's bought In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, we're gonna serve the same food. It's gonna look the same. Everything's gonna, from the outside, everything's going to appear the same. The experience of the customer is probably going to pretty much remain the same. But we're cutting wages and we're cutting benefits.
I don't think that the experience of the customer would remain the same. I mean, people in California are willing to wait on long lines sometimes to get an In-N-Out Burger, and it's a combination of things. And again, I'm not a paid spokesman for the company, but they use all fresh ingredients. They don't use the same frozen, highly processed foods that the other fast food chains do. And in order to do that, you need to have people who know how to cook these things, and it requires actually some skill to be a short-order cook at these restaurants. So if they were to cut the wages and bring in a whole different labor structure, it really might affect the quality of the food. And, I think that people who make your food should be paid decently and treated decently. It's a pretty important job in our society. And ideally, you want the person who's making and preparing your food to be happy with his or her work. And when there's not, there can be all kinds of problems.
Well, I'd say it goes way beyond just food. I think those are truisms just right across the board.
Yeah.
That if we're going to organize a society and a culture that is going to provide the rules for the game of business and is going to provide the infrastructure for the game of business, that we have to say to those who want to engage in the game of business, you're benefiting from this society. You also have to support this society in a way that's positive. And
I agree with you completely.
But, we're preaching to the choir here. Tell us about, and by the way, I just want to let you know that Zen Pickle, one of the folks in our chat room, we've got a chat room running here on the side that, for folks that get together for the show, and says you're a hero to Zen Pickle. So,
and that's not a cousin of mine, I promise you.
Yeah, so tell us about some of the things in the fast food and the meatpacking industries that most surprised you when you went to do your research for this book.
Well, I knew virtually nothing about this until I started doing the research and reporting, and I guess the two biggest surprises for me were, firstly, the appalling conditions in America's meatpacking plants. I mean, like everyone else, read The Jungle in high school, and I just hadn't thought about what was going on in meatpacking plants since then. And, I mean, it's absolutely terrible, not just the food safety conditions for anyone who eats beef today, but also the working conditions are terrible. And that happened in a very brief period of time. Meatpacking was a high-paid union job, really, until the late 1970s, and now it's one of the lowest-paid and the most dangerous job in the United States, measured by the rate of serious injury. Well, as the fast food chains got bigger, they started buying their ground beef from bigger and bigger meatpacking companies. McDonald's and the other chains want their ground beef to taste everywhere exactly the same. So they stopped buying from small local distributors, started buying from big meatpacking companies. And the Reagan administration allowed these meatpacking companies to just get bigger and bigger and buy out their rivals. Now, these big meatpacking companies were very tough on labor and broke the unions, cut wages, imported illegal immigrants to do the work. And, you know, again, being a meatpacking worker in the 70s was like being an auto worker. It was a job you'd have for your career. It was a well-paid job that gave you a middle-class life. And today, it's not that. It's a brutal, very dangerous job. And spending time in these meatpacking communities in Texas and Colorado and Nebraska, there were some things I saw that reminded me of the 19th century in America. Very disturbing, the way that injured workers are fired, the way that, you know, people who get hurt have to live on public assistance and are chewed up literally by the machinery. So that was shocking and appalling to me. And the other part that really surprised me in looking at this industry was the degree to which this food is so processed and industrialized that, you know, it's really like a industrial commodity, more than anything that you'd make in your own kitchen. And I visited, and I write about in the book, this flavor factory in New Jersey, and they are manufacturing the taste of much of your fast food at a separate factory, and it's a very strange place. There are these chemical additives that make fast food taste like what you think it should taste like. And
yeah, now, just a couple of days ago, I saw a news report. We were down in Mexico for my daughter's wedding, and it was something that we saw in the hotel room, so I can't source it. But they were talking, and it was about American food, and they were talking about how somebody had gotten E. coli 157H7, the deadly strain of E. coli, in steak.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, how does this stuff get into steak? Because steak isn't ground up like ground beef is.
Yeah.
And so if something was on the surface of it, you would think it would get killed quite quickly in cooking. And the steak was cooked on the outside. The inside was rare. So how did this bacteria penetrate into the steak? And it turns out that they were injecting the steak with flavorizers, tenderizers and flavorizers, using syringes, and that this is apparently common practice in that industry.
The real reason that it got into the steak is actually simpler, which is just greed, pure greed. And the meatpacking industry has fought against food safety legislation, you know, for over 100 years now. And the fact that there should never be any E. coli inside your steak, and it gets in because they're injecting this flavor ingredient, I've heard, but also because they're using tenderizers to take less expensive cuts of steak and make them seem more tender. And these mechanical devices pierce the outside of the steak and pummel it, you know, to make it tender, and in doing so, take the bacteria from the outside and put it right into the middle of the steak where it shouldn't be. I mean, there shouldn't be E. coli 0157H7 on the outside of the steak or in your ground beef. But the fact that it's in these steaks, it's unbelievable. And there have been people warning for years that these meat tenderizers were going to introduce E. coli into the steaks, but they keep selling them.
Yeah, and this bacteria comes about from the intersection of big pharma and big food. Hang on there, Eric. We've got to go to a break here, but I'd like to carry on this conversation if you can stick with us. You can? Stay with us. You're with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free family legal guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why don't you have something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A long time ago when the earth was green, and there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen. They'd run around free when the earth was being born. But the loveliest of them all was the unicorn.
And you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people instead of they the transnational corporations. Welcome back. We're talking with Eric Schlosser, who's the author of Fast Food Nation. And, boy, if we still had unicorns, Eric, I think that they would be on the edible list right now. And the edible list for herbivores and cows and things. I mean, we have a situation where we're feeding animals to animals, which led to mad cow disease problems in Europe, but we're still doing it here to a large extent. We've got the situation where we're half of all pharmaceuticals manufactured in the United States are being given routinely to our food animals, leading to an explosion of antibiotic resistant pathogens. And we've got this labor meltdown that you've chronicled in the fast food market and in the meatpacking industry. Where's the hope? What can be done about this? What can the average person do about this?
Well, the most important thing is for the average person to inform himself or herself about what's happening. And I'm not saying read my book. I'm really not. But I do believe that what you eat, and especially what you feed your children, is of just huge importance. And very few people know these things or have bothered to learn them. And I certainly was one of those people. I was a fast food consumer, and I just had never thought about these things. So the first thing is to just educate yourself, not only about the health characteristics of the food that you eat, but also the system that's producing it, because that's ultimately tied to the health of the nation. And then the next thing is to act upon that knowledge. I really believe that in the most immediate sense, how you spend your dollars has an enormous effect on our system. And so I don't go to fast food restaurants anymore, and not because I'm afraid of getting sick, but because I don't want to give my money to these companies. And I don't buy meat from the big meatpacking companies because I don't want to support the system. So how you spend your money can have an effect. And then beyond that, if you're concerned about the bigger issues and want to be more active, there are all kinds of groups that are trying to change the law on these issues, whether it's food safety, worker safety, industrial agriculture. And right now we have a situation where the government agencies that are supposed to be regulating the meatpacking industry are pretty much controlled by the meatpacking industry. And we need to have government getting back involved on the side of consumers, and especially in this administration, that's not happening.
Yeah, and their avowal is that it won't. I mean, their dedication is to supporting industry over consumers. And again, that's a political problem that can be solved at a political level, it seems. Eric, my recollection, and I could be wrong, but I think not, is that Oprah Winfrey ended up being sued in large part because she had a conversation similar to the one I'm having with you right now.
Yeah.
What's the status of the veggie libel laws?
Well, there are many states that have veggie libel laws, which makes it a violation to criticize the agricultural products of that state. Much of Fast Food Nation is set in Colorado, which has one of those veggie libel laws, and it's an unusual one in the sense that it's a felony, and you could conceivably spend a year in prison for criticizing the ground beef that's being produced in Colorado. Now, in my book, I was very, very careful to make sure that I wasn't libeling anyone. And on radio appearances, I really try to make sure that I'm not slandering anybody. I was concerned about perhaps being sued, as Oprah was, because, you know, even if they have no case, they can impose real pain on you by suing you. In the case of the Colorado ground beef, The plant that I wrote about in Colorado, not long after Fast Food Nation came out, was responsible for shipping millions of pounds, or just huge, huge amounts of contaminated ground beef, contaminated with fecal material. And so that that made me less concerned that they were going to sue me.
Yeah, so you were a prophet before in your own time, as it were. Eric, I'd like to talk about your other book about some of your research into prison material. We've got about a two-minute break here, and then we're going to come back and carry that on if you're up for it.
Great.
great. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Verizon Communications must rehire 2,300 workers it laid off last December after an arbitrator ruled Friday their dismissal was in violation of their union contract. The jobs, all based in New York State, needed to be cut because of what Verizon called weak economic conditions in the telecommunications industry. But that's not enough justification to invoke a clause in a contract with the Communications Workers of America, allowing for immediate layoffs. In addition to getting their jobs back, all 2,300 workers will receive more than 6 months' worth of back pay, which will cost Verizon an estimated $100 million.
Disney's employees, which the corporation likes to call its cast members, have long been bound by a Byzantine set of regulations regarding hair length and color, facial hair, as well as prohibitions on tattoos, piercings, and various forms of jewelry. But for the first time since 2000, the company has rolled back its restrictions on personal grooming and dress. For the first time, men will be allowed to wear their hair in braids, albeit above the collar. Women, meanwhile, will be permitted to wear more revealing footwear and less conservative earrings. Pantyhose, however, are still mandatory.
Has the state of Wisconsin been unwittingly helping strikebreakers in a four-month walkout at a Tyson Foods pepperoni processing plant? United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 538, which represents the 470 striking workers at the plant in Jefferson, has discovered that at least 20 convicted felons on probation or parole are working to help keep the facility running. Many of them are still living in halfway houses. The Wisconsin Department of Corrections says it has no control over how offenders get jobs. That's handled through a private temp agency. However, the state does say it will stop referring offenders to that agency so as to help clear up any misunderstanding.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting coast to coast from the People's Republic of Vermont via the IE America Radio Network out there in Detroit. And, boy, we are bouncing off the ABC Star Guide satellite up in outer space to radio stations around the country and off the Sirius satellite if you're listening in your car or truck. And we're talking to Eric Schlosser, award-winning journalist and correspondent for the Atlantic Monthly, among others, author of Fast Food Nation. Eric, in today's Burlington Free Press, there were two interesting articles that created, in my mind, an interesting juxtaposition, and I'm not really sure where you're going with your research on your new book, and so you can tell me if this is just completely...
I've got to interrupt and tell you that news story that was just broadcast about the meatpacking company using inmates and ex-convicts as strikebreakers, I hadn't heard that one before, and that kind of very neatly ties them together, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Isn't it? It's interesting how these things work out. And in fact, by the way, there was a question. One of our Zen Pickle in our chat room, and if anybody wants to call in and talk with Eric, 1-800-TALK. Yes, 1-800-825-5937 is our number. He said, or Zen Pickle says, Tom, ask Eric, how can we be sure we're buying meat that doesn't support big meat manufacturers?
Well, you really can't be entirely sure, but at the same time, the things to look for on the label are no antibiotics or growth hormones used, and no animal protein in the feed. These are things that are important to you as a consumer, and the kinds of ranchers and processors that are doing this don't tend to be the big ones. They tend to be smaller, independent ones. You don't want meat that's been treated with antibiotics, the animals who have been treated with antibiotics or hormones or have any animal products in the feed.
Right, and shopping locally, buying from food co-ops,
yeah,
things like that. Okay, these two articles in today's Burlington Free Press, one, marijuana doctor faces suspension, and the other, we must learn from Benton Harbor. The Benton Harbor story, it's an op-ed in today's paper by a Baltimore City police officer, a fellow who was a former police officer, is now a doctoral candidate in sociology at Harvard. And he talks about how Benton Harbor, Michigan, has recently melted down in riots, and suggests that the cause of this is ultimately the drug laws in the United States, that the antipathy that he experienced when he was a police officer in neighborhoods similar to Benton Harbor's neighborhoods where the riots have occurred, largely come out of this, that in extreme poverty you have people whose basic, if they want to be entrepreneurs, pot is where they, or other drugs, they become drug dealers. Well, to quote, he says, most citizens in and out of our ghettos, including drug users, despise drug dealers, but nobody supports heavy-handed drug enforcement. Those at the receiving end of our drug policy know it simply doesn't work. People will riot as long as police keep locking them up without anything getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, liberals are correct to note that rioting does not happen in the absence of poverty, poor education, and poor policing. Conservatives are right to blame the individual rioters, but both sides miss the central point. The problems that lead to riots stem from the drug trade. 80 years of failed drug prohibition have destroyed swaths of urban America. And then there's this article here about this physician in Oakland, California, who has been writing prescriptions for medical marijuana in accordance with California law. Alaska, Arizona, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington all now allow this. And the article notes, this is an AP article, quote, the Bush administration is stepping up its efforts to crack down on doctors who approve marijuana. And at the same time that I read these two things in our research for another article that I was doing today, I came across a statistic that the United States has 40% of all the prisoners in the world,
yeah,
in our country. 40% of all the people in prison in the world are in United States prisons. And
well, I could talk for hours about this because I have a book out right now called Reefer Madness, which is a look at the black market, but it really looks at the black market for marijuana and the war on drugs. And the book I'm writing is about prisons. And, I mean, it's the question I'm trying to answer in the new book that I'm writing right now is, how does the land of the free come to be the greatest prison state the world has ever seen? I mean, we have more people behind bars than anyone has ever done before in history. And the war on drugs cannot be separated, really, from the situations in the inner city. I don't know that I would blame the riots on the war on drugs, but I would blame, you know, the same underlying kind of poverty and separation from the mainstream that leads to the drug dealing and that also leads to this kind of alienation. It's remarkable when you go into our prisons, as I have been doing, just how much dysfunction we have created in our society. We have 2 million people behind bars one way or another, and most people think that inmates are sent away forever and we throw away the key. The reality is these people on average are away for 2 years and then they're back on the streets, And there's a really close connection between our society and this prison society, even if none of us have ever been into a prison. Most of the people who are locked away are drug abusers or substance abusers. Something like 70 to 80% have a history of substance abuse. They get very little drug treatment in prison. They're back out on the street. They commit more crimes, either selling drugs, dealing drugs, or, you know, stealing things to buy drugs, and then they're back in prison. And it's a completely Kafkaesque and crazy system. And again, I would argue that even if you never use drugs and you're never in prison, you're very much affected by it, because you have to drive down the same road or walk down the same street with people who may have been. So it's a terrible, terrible social problem in America. And because these prisons are out of sight, they tend to be out of mind. But they're having a huge impact, I think, on our culture.
Right. Well, in the 5 minutes that you I know you have to leave at 2:45 here, but in the 5 minutes that we have left, two questions come to mind. One, when you look back at the history of alcohol prohibition, I mean, first of all, you read Sherlock Holmes novels, for example, and Sherlock Holmes is shooting up cocaine. I mean, there were basically no drug laws for the vast majority of human civilization.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, largely in the early years of the 20th century, we started just prohibiting things, prohibiting pot, heroin, cocaine, alcohol. And the prohibition against alcohol seemed to be generated by religious fervor and eventually failed. What generated the prohibition against all these other substances, and why are they not similarly, why is this kind of prohibition not similarly being perceived as failed in this country as it is perceived, for example, in the Netherlands?
Well, I can speak most knowledgeably about marijuana because I did the research for this book. The prohibition against marijuana comes from much the same place as the prohibition of alcohol. It's a very moralistic and a puritanical impulse. The reason that marijuana is still illegal and alcohol is widely available and advertised on TV has to do with a whole racial component and a cultural component. Marijuana, from the very beginning, has been associated with racial minorities, with poor Mexicans and poor blacks, and also with various nonconformist groups like beatniks and jazz musicians and hippies and now the hip-hop community. So the sort of war on marijuana that the Bush administration is escalating is very much a racial and most of all a cultural crusade. I am not a proponent of anyone smoking pot, and there are lots of good reasons not to smoke pot, but the reality is that alcohol is much more toxic, is responsible for many, many more physical and social problems than marijuana, and yet, as I said, you can advertise it on TV. And the idea of removing the license of a doctor who is prescribing marijuana is so absurd at a time when pot is now being provided through the Canadian medical service, through the state, the government health program, as it is now in the Netherlands and in other states. So this is a highly irrational, moralistic crusade, and it has much more to do with the kinds of people who smoke pot and not the actual properties of the drug itself. And again, I'm not telling anyone to get high, but this is the reality, and that's what I look at in the book, is trying to understand how we got to that point.
So what's the trend right now?
Well, the trend, you know, it's interesting. We have this government that ostensibly believes in states' rights, doing everything it can to overturn the state's laws in California as it applies to marijuana. I think that this administration is just vehemently anti-marijuana and renewing the war on drugs. But if you look at the rest of the world, the rest of the Western industrialized world is moving away from this policy. Marijuana is on the verge of being decriminalized in Canada. It's already been decriminalized in Belgium, the Netherlands, Italy, Portugal, Spain. Switzerland's on the verge of legalizing it. And I think as all these other countries move away from our failed policy, what we're doing in the United States is going to seem all the more absurd. And there's a reason that this book is called Reefer Madness, because it's a deeply irrational policy that we have that's causing many more problems than it's solving.
Yeah, not to mention the movie of the 30s, but the same title of a very strange movie. Okay, Eric Schlosser, is there a website where people can find more out about you and what you're writing and the things you're talking about, or anything, a website
you
recommend?
I really don't have a website. I guess people can go into a bookstore to see what I've already written, or you know, read the Atlantic Monthly, which is the publication I write for the most frequently.
Right. Great. Okay, thank you, Eric.
By the way, where
Eric
are you?
I'm in Montpelier, and where
Montpelier.
Are you?
I'm in Charlotte.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, here we are, one of the greatest states in the country.
It's terrific. Thank
Eric,
you very much.
Eric, thanks for being on the program today. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program here on the IE America Radio Network. That was Eric Schlosser, author of Reefer Madness and Fast Food Nation, and an interesting conversation. Back to the war in Iraq. I want to just come back to this topic for the last few minutes here, because this is front and center for all of us right now. From an article published in the Boston Globe by Stephen Glane and Robert Schlesinger, titled "Halliburton Unit Expands War Repair Role," and I quote, "They travel like foreign dignitaries, their SUVs escorted by two U.S. Army Humvees and a security detail led by a master sergeant. No Iraqi official is too busy to meet them, and when it comes to Iraq's most precious resource, oil, they are granted total and instant access. Officials from Kellogg, Brown & Root Services, a subsidiary of oil services giant Halliburton Company, are using a broadly worded contract to evaluate and repair Iraq's petroleum infrastructure, quote, as directed, end quote, by the U.S. government, to gain a huge head start over potential competitors in redeveloping the country's vast, outdated oil industry." And they go on to talk about how KBR, Halliburton, this division of Halliburton, is taking over large chunks of the Iraqi economy. Everything from gasoline imports to laundry services. And then they've got this quote from the general manager of Baghdad's Daura refinery company, Dathar al-Kashaba. He says, "We don't need KBR. I can work for any company to do this job." But we have now this situation, this 10-year contract that Halliburton got in 2001. Now think about this. In 2001, and this is what makes me wonder about the 2001 meetings that Dick Cheney had, where he won't even release the names of the companies that participated in them, that we were talking about in the previous hour. In 2001, Halliburton got this contract. It's called the Army Logistics Civil Augmentation Program, also known as LOGCAP, L-O-G-C-A-P, that calls for the company, Halliburton, to provide a wide range of logistics services to the U.S. Army. By the end of May, KBR had received $425 million under that contract, according to Henry Waxman of California. $425 million. And they say, well, okay, the other headline today, war costs could reach $100 billion. I mean, where is this money going? Well, it's going to the corporations that sponsor the Republican Party. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jeff in Denver's on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Sorry to miss your show for a while. I was out in the world for a little while. And it was interesting. I just got a note in my windshield about the bumper stickers I had in my car. I thought I'd share it with you guys.
Okay.
I have "Don't Attack Iraq" on one side, and I have "Free Tibet" on the other. And this guy who was driving a big pickup truck left the note. I didn't get to talk to him, unfortunately. Says, "You can't have it both ways. How can you free Tibet without imposing your will on another country? If you want to change another's free will, where better to start than Iraq? If you want to prepare for peace, prepare for war."
Uh-huh.
And it just is one of those things that people just don't get it. Just because I want to free Iraq, free Tibet, or free any country, doesn't mean to attack them. And it's that kind of black and white thinking that it's like if it's one thing or another.
Yeah, and it's interesting, particularly with Tibet. I spent a week with the Dalai Lama in Dharamsala, where he lives, McLeod Ganj. And as part of this group, it was called the Synthesis Dialogues. There were about 25 of us who met with him for 5 days. And the issue of Tibet came up, and the issue of whether we should support any sort of action against China. And he made the point that this was a conflict that went back over 900 years between these two countries, and that he didn't think that violence would solve it. I think that so many of us have And on the other hand, you could say, well, if we hadn't stopped Hitler with violence, we'd you know, we'd all be speaking German, and maybe that would eventually peter out. Who knows? I mean, it's like, where do you, Jeff? Where do you begin and end?
Okay, well, first of all, you have to start at home. Act like a saint at home. You have to stop doing the stuff that contributes yourselves. We've got to stop supporting petty dictatorships as we do in the Central Asian republics, as we do in Central America. I myself was like with this person here. If I had been able to talk to him, I wouldn't have argued with him. I would have discussed with him. If he tried to argue, I wouldn't have participated. So we have to be nonviolent ourselves.
To create peace, be peace.
Excuse me?
To create peace, be peace.
Yes. But at the same time, it doesn't mean passivity. You know, there can be great activity in being nonviolent. And so first we stop doing the things that create problems. And we have to stop overthrowing, like in Iran in 1953 with Mossadegh. We as a country have to stop doing that kind of thing. We already have problems. We're going to have to deal with them where there is no good answer, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we've got to now stop creating them. And we have to start acting like saints. We have to have a government that's honest, that is not hypocritical in every single regard.
Yeah, it would be nice if we could once again become the example to the world. Thinking of the Chinese marching Tiananmen Square, quoting Thomas Jefferson and carrying that 36-foot-tall papier-mâché Statue of Liberty. That's the ideal that we need to come back to. Jeff, thanks for the call and thanks for your comments. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours, so what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out, because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
The Business Trip by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between the last meeting and home, between four drive-thrus and the blob of ketchup on your favorite tie, between 60 dead bugs on your windshield, an empty window squirter, and a wiper blade gone awry. Somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
Call 1-800-800-8000 or visit super8.com. All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, Bartkop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart
he's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man for people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Welcome back. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Kellogg Brown and Root, Halliburton Corporation, had pre-positioned personnel and equipment in the Iraq region before the war, going back to a contract from 2001. Linda in Cupertino is on the line. Linda, you wanted to talk about the war. What's up?
I wanted to say we sure know now with Halliburton's activities and so forth, why the Republicans stole that election in 2000 in broad daylight.
It's all about money.
We know why. That was for war profiteering, for Bush's supporters and donators. But what I wanted to call about was I hope everyone caught Larry Klayman of Judicial Watch being interviewed by Bill Moyers on Now on PBS last Friday.
I saw a piece of that.
It was so tiny. I wish he could have gone into more detail, because this is the David and Goliath fight that the government was fought about in 91 in the Clinton healthcare task force, and the court that ruled against Cheney in this case, in the Cheney Energy Task Force, was the very same court that ruled against the Clintons back in 91, and they used the very same case law to show Cheney that he had to now be under those laws. And it was it's a wonderful change of face for the Republicans.
Yeah, and there were two of those three judges were appointed by one was appointed by Carter,
right.
One by Clinton, and the third one who dissented was
right.
Appointed by GW's dad.
Right, but if you read the ruling by the court, it showed that the judge who was going to support Cheney, his argument was so off the wall. He even tried to discount. He even tried to say that the original ruling that the Republicans got to go after Hillary Clinton and the healthcare task force in 91 was unconstitutional. kind of funny to see them turn themselves into pretzels.
It's pretty amazing stuff, Linda. Thanks for the call. I got to stop it there because we've run out of time. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Thanks for joining us today. Tune back in tomorrow, same time, same place, the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's being exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network. All right, boys, come on.